Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So this is just a little warning. Kate, Gary, and myself are going to be talking about our faith stories, our times growing up in the church, when we left the church, and what our life is like now. We just really want people to know, and we understand that there is many stories out there, and we just we don't want to hurt anybody or trigger anybody.
Yep.
So please just think about that before pressing play.
And we don't talk about a lot of terrible things that happen in churches in general.
No.
The Royal Commission, any of that.
No, but we know.
We do.
All of it.
And if that is just triggering for you to even think about.
It's okay.
That's
skip
okay.
it. And we'll be
skip
back to regular P work in 2 weeks.
Yep.
We would like to acknowledge that this podcast meeting is being held on Aboriginal land, the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. And we would like to pay respect to their elders past, present, and emerging, and their multiple birth parents with children with disabilities.
And this week, you've got the whole lot of us, Kate, Mandy, and Gary, and we're having a discussion about our faith and our faith journeys.
This podcast contains truth, laughter, and the occasional F word, so it's not really suitable for children.
Sometimes you just have to get your shits out. Shit, 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 shit. That's right, this is a language warning. Oh, shit.
Hi, Kate.
Hi, Mandy.
Hello, Gary.
Hello, ladies.
Yay!
The whole peas and beans
gang.
Together.
I did say it could be our first threesome, but
well, it's my first. I can tell you that.
It's definitely mine.
Well, mine too, I must say. We are so thrilled to have Gary with us today.
Yeah, we are.
So our episode today is going to be talking about our faith and all the things that we've been through as three adults.
I think it's going to be deconstructing and reconstructing.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's going to be some heavy things and lots of light things because we've enjoyed, actually, while painful, I've enjoyed the journey.
Yeah, me
of
too.
Finding out who I am.
Yeah.
Without the presence of a church. So
yeah.
And this is probably going to be a two-parter, which is the first time.
Yeah.
The peas have
a threesome
left you
and
hanging.
A twosome.
You're assuming we've got something worth saying.
Well, yeah, but we always do.
We do. No, we certainly do.
I think we
do. Yeah, we do. And for those of you who are new, hello, welcome. For those of you who are not, you've been hanging out for this for 3 years.
3.5 years.
So we're finally in the right headspace.
We talked about it in the very first episode of Two Peas, that was one of the things that Kate and I were, when we became friends, that we had in common, and there wasn't very many people that had premature twins that maybe were having some diagnosis and were leaving the church.
All at once.
Yeah, all at once.
Yeah, in the same year.
And then Gary and I met in a private Facebook group, and I don't know when I found out that you had left the church as well.
I don't recall, and I don't think that was a topic that was often raised. I'm not sure, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I must have said something and then you just let it slip in.
Yeah.
And then I was like, wow, you get this story too.
Yeah. So I think our three stories are really different, so it'll be interesting for people to hear them.
That's right.
That's true.
Yeah, see where they fit. And I was saying to Mandy, yes, this is about religion, but I think people have left like a really big job. You know, yeah. They've been corporate lawyers or something, and then they decide to do something completely different and they lose all those friends.
Yeah.
Or people who move countries.
Yep.
I know even moving schools
yep.
felt really big to me, like yeah. I was leaving behind that group of friends, because that is what happens when you leave a faith. You
That's
do
right.
take some friends, but you lose
yeah.
a lot. So I think even if you haven't left a faith, if you've ever felt othered, then you'll probably understand a little bit yeah. of what we're saying
mm-hmm.
today.
And if you've had a part of your identity that's been so central to who you are for so long, and then to sort of find yourself suddenly not having or sharing that identity anymore, it's no wonder it causes grief.
Mm.
You know, for 30 years, my identity was, as an adult, not only a person of faith, but a leader in the church.
Mm.
And from 1977 to 2007. So, yeah, you're right. I think there's a lot goes on, and it is an incredibly important transition in life if that's what happens to you.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
It is, and at the time, it's hard to find people to talk to about it if you've been really yep. enmeshed in
yes.
church culture, because I would say 90% of my friends were church-based, so I couldn't talk to them about the fact that I didn't agree with what they were doing. So it can actually be really lonely as well.
Mm.
So, yeah. But here we are.
So we thought, let's talk about this. What did I say in the email? I said, let's say we're going to keep this full of light and hope and truth.
Mm.
Yeah?
Mm. Mm.
So this is not, we're not criticizing.
Oh, no.
We're not putting people down, any of that stuff. As Kate and I've always said, we've got people very close to us that we love that are Christians and that are in the church. And so,
and I know
we're really mindful of that.
Really mindful. And I thought maybe it might be nice to just do like a couple of minutes each of, you don't have to say the religion if you don't want to, but were you born into it?
Yeah.
Did you choose it? Did your parents choose it? So do you want to go first, Gary?
Yeah, when I was about 7, my dear mum said, right, it's time we're going to go to church.
Oh.
And we started Sunday school. And so I guess it's been a part of my life ever since then, not every week, but quite frequently, up through youth group, up to the age of 17, when I had my come to Jesus moment.
Yes.
And made a commitment at that point that this was not only something that I believed in and wanted to be part of, but something that I wanted to commit my life to as a full-time endeavor and become a career and a life path. And that's when I decided to go into or to train for ministry. And then I was in ministry from then, I went to Sydney to Theological College. I was in Toowoomba and this was Churches of Christ, and that was by accident.
Yeah.
Like most of us join churches either by accident or simply by family heritage. Mm. We don't make a choice
yes.
usually, or often we don't.
Mm-mm.
So it was Churches of Christ, and I went through college, graduated in 81, and I was in full-time ministry then up until 2001.
Wow.
And remained involved and active up until about 2007.
So were you like in charge of a church?
Yes, when I graduated in 81, I was the pastor of a small country church in New South Wales for 3 years.
Right.
Wow.
And then a suburban church in Brisbane for 3 years. And then I went back to my hometown of Toowoomba and joined a ministry team, which is a whole different dynamic.
Yes.
And it was quite a large-ish church, and I was there for 10 years.
Wow.
It's, I don't know, I know growing up in a church it's all encompassing, but working?
Yeah.
Like, and I know that church ministers that I knew and loved, they'll get a call at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
They'll get, like, you're on call 24/7.
You are, and there is that to it. I never found that to be the most stressful or taxing part of it, but there are also, I mean, in other ways, it's a breeze because you're kind of your own boss in a way. You're kind of, you know, very, depending on the church, I suppose, but generally you're very free.
Yeah.
You make your own routine each day, and there's a lot of freedom granted to you. And I think both sides were true for me.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, that's true as well, I suppose. No one knows where you are at 10 a.m. on Thursday.
Yeah.
Unless
and if you're working all day Sunday, you can have a day off during the week. Is that how it worked or what?
I had Mondays off.
Yeah. Okay, to recover.
And in those days, nobody had nobody carried phones around in their pockets.
True.
So it was a lot easier to check out.
Yes.
I don't know what it's like these days. It must be a little more difficult. You must have to turn your device off these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have very strong boundaries.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And what about you, Mandy?
Well, I was born into the same denomination, Churches of Christ. My ministers on both sides, mum and dad met on a Churches of Christ camp. Mm. I mean, yep. That was the way it was. So we went to a small church out here in the Outer East, and that was my whole childhood. I loved it. In my teenage years, I got a bit feral. I didn't want to go. There was no girls my age, so why would you want to go as a teenage girl? But we went every Sunday morning. We went Sunday night. So I went to youth group. Dad was my youth group leader, which I didn't mind, but probably as a teenager, you don't want to go to youth group with your dad.
Yeah.
But and now as an adult, I appreciate that what he did.
Mm.
I really, really do. And I have for a long time since becoming a parent, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then I left that church sort of when I was about 17 because I wanted to be with people my age.
Mm.
And that was a really big loss for my family to move to a different church, but they were happy that I was going to one.
Mm.
And then I stayed there. And it was sort of like Bible Belt, Eastern Suburbs, Melbourne.
Mm-mm.
And I stayed there right up until I had the twins, and then I dabbled back for a couple of years.
Mm.
So that was sort of
2007.
From 1976 to 2007-ish, yeah.
Yeah.
But when I was in the big church in my early 20s, I was a worship leader. So I was a youth group leader all in the early 20s, was at this church every Friday night, meetings, worship team, backing singer, sung on some CDs, like –
Loved it.
It was my whole life. Apart from working, that was my life.
I don't think people realise outside of a church. Like, I think it's like being in the cheer squad and the banner making for a footy team.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Like, it's
everything
you do is about that church. And the amount of volunteer hours that goes into churches is
enormous.
Absolutely mind-blowing. You cannot comprehend it.
And I think probably that's why I went into so much detail in the book because I wanted people to see how much of my life was in the church, so then to leave it, what that meant.
Because I think people sometimes think, oh, you go for an hour on a Sunday.
No. Mm. It was like, okay, we've got a worship meeting Monday night. We've got small group Tuesday night. Mm. We've got, you know, coming to help youth group Friday night. Mm. Then we've got to be at church early to have a rehearsal.
Mm.
So we're getting there at 4 o'clock. We're going to rehearse for 2 hours. Then we'll do the service.
Yeah.
Then we'll do the service for 2 hours. Then, you know, I'd be.
Then we'll go to the pancake party.
Absolutely exhausted. Yeah, yeah. Then we'll go to, or we'd go to the keg.
Yeah.
And we'd turn up at 7 o'clock at night or 7:30 and there'd be like 40 people. And the people at the keg would be like, oh, here comes the Christians.
They're not going to buy much alcohol.
I know, they'll buy no alcohol. They'll just try and scrimp and save on every bit of food because I've got no money. Oh, dear. So, yeah.
As you said, when so much of your life is engaged that way, there's a lot at stake.
There is a lot at stake.
If you lose that, you're losing a lot.
Yes. Yes. And also the dreams of your future. So I'm going to come here. I'm going to be here with my husband. I'm going to bring my children up here.
Mm.
We're going to have this exact same life.
Mm.
They might go to a Christian school or, you know, all those sorts of things that you think might be and then they're not.
Yeah. It's it's like a divorce.
Yeah.
Really, it is.
Yeah.
And so for me, my dad was Irish Catholic. My mum was just some nominal Protestant. And then mum really got obsessed with, I mean, they're mainstream religions, but they're alternate. So the Jehovah's Witness, the Mormons and the Seventh-day Adventists.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure why she was drawn to those.
Might have been the people that she met.
And
or
I think
must have been.
Those religions, they go out and get people to come in.
Yeah.
So she was at home with kids and someone was knocking on her door.
Got it.
And they were happy to – she wanted to study the Bible. She wanted to learn stuff and they are more than happy to spend hours doing that with you.
Yep.
And I think that she was drawn to the structure. She had a really tricky childhood and I think that structure – and the Seventh-day Adventist Church has a lot of structure. So, like, it's got a book called the – I'm going to get this wrong – but the 52 Fundamentals or something that the church is based on. So you can look it up. This is what we're doing and this is why we're doing it. And I think for some people it makes you feel really safe.
Mm.
So I was about 4 or 5 when Mum joined the church. We were living in Melbourne at the time. And I can remember watching Hey Hey at Saturday in the morning and Dad making bacon and eggs. I can remember the smell of that. And then the next week we were all at church and no TV and no more bacon. Like it was like, boom, Mum's decided she's doing this. So Dad didn't join the church till I was 9. So I can clearly remember him getting baptised, the Seventh-day Adventists do baptism by immersion in the front of the church.
Yep.
So I can really remember that. I remember I got a pink velvet dress, so I was pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
But Dad really loved Mum, so he just started coming. But it was quite funny because he used to smoke, and Seventh-day Adventists do not smoke.
No.
There is no nicotine, caffeine, alcohol. And he'd go out in between. We had Sabbath school and church because we go on a Saturday. And he'd have a cigarette and then he'd come back in. And he was actually, they just assumed he was an Adventist and they got him to lead the children's like divisions. And then they nearly lost their mind when they found out he was a Catholic who smoked. Anyway, it caused quite controversy.
Oh, there's no due diligence back in the 80s.
No due diligence. I couldn't look up his history on Facebook. So, yeah, when he joined the church, it was massive because his whole family believed that he was now going to hell.
Yeah.
Right? Because he left Catholicism.
Yeah.
So they were sad in Ireland. And then when we went there, I remember Dad be like, you've really got to show them what it's like to be a Christian.
Wow.
And you've got to be. And so we'd hang out with them all week. And then Friday night, we'd go off because there were no Protestant churches in the Republic of Ireland that you have to, you know, cross the border to the north.
Yep.
And there was one Seventh-day Adventist church there. And so we had a camp van and we'd go and camp. So that we could go to church, we wouldn't see my cousins. And yeah, and it was just, for them as well, really confronting because everyone's Catholic in Ireland. There's no other religion, or back then especially. So, and for us, growing up in the Seventh-day Adventist church, it is all-encompassing.
Mm.
You go to Seventh-day Adventist schools. Most people worked for the church. So mm-hmm. we moved between Melbourne and Sydney when I was a kid, but when we ended up in Melbourne when I was 10 and we lived out in the Yarra Valley, the Weet-Bix factory was there. So Sanitarium's owned by the church. We had a big church publishing house that published all the books. They've got lots of books at the church. We had a hospital and a nursing home and a massive church. So I'm going to say a third of the town was Seventh-day Adventists.
Mm.
Yep.
So it was like this mecca, really. Mm. And, you know, half the shops didn't even open on Saturdays because there just wasn't enough people going shopping.
Yep.
So it was, and it was the same, like we did youth group on Friday night, like Vespers. Then all day Saturday, you'd pretty much be at church. We did Sabbath school from 9:30 till 11, church from 11 till probably 1. Usually have a lunch at the church, maybe an afternoon meeting. And then in winter, when the sun set, we could have a youth group. But in summer, we couldn't because the sun didn't set till 9 o'clock.
Of course.
Killer. And so we'd have
Seriously.
To like, yeah. Wow. And you have to go for a walk by the river but not hop in. Or, so lots of bushwalking. Lots. Maybe that's why I hate it now.
Probably.
And all of my friends were in the church. I went to Seventh-day Adventist schools. A lot of my friends went to the Seventh-day Adventist University in Sydney and they became nurses or teachers.
Mm-hmm.
That's just sort of what they did, especially the girls. And I probably had maybe 3 friends that weren't in the church, and I made friends when I didn't put my children into Seventh-day Adventist schools.
Right.
That was when I made friends outside the church, and they're really interesting to talk to because they're like, you are nothing like the woman that you were when we met you.
Wow.
You are just so different. Mm. So, but I would say the thing growing up in the Seventh-day Adventist church is you believe 100% that you have absolute truth and no other religion has it. And so I felt sorry for everyone. I was so sad that my friends weren't going to go to heaven, like constantly sad. And I don't know what you do with that growing up. Like, I love this kid in my class, but he's not going to go to heaven.
Mm.
And so I would say to them, oh, now I think, how did I do this? You know, I'm really worried about you. And they'd be like, I'm okay. I don't think this is true. Mm. And I'd be like, oh, they're hardening their heart to the Lord. But it was so important.
That's right.
You know, it's their whole eternity. That's all my parents cared about, everybody going to heaven.
Yeah, I didn't grow up with that fear.
Yeah, I did. was really real. And I don't know if anyone's seen the Book of Mormon. Mandy and I have, because it's the best
show. Yes, I loved it.
Loved it.
Oh, my gosh. Utterly, from the minute the light turned on.
Hilarious.
We laughed so from the minute the curtain went raised. We were just like, these are our people.
I had sore stomach for 2 or 3 days, like I'd been working out the first time I saw it. I've seen it 5 times now.
That's so funny.
But they have this spooky Mormon hell dream where the main character is in hell and he's like a coffee cup goes past him, a Starbucks cup, and I'm like, that is growing up a Seventh-day Adventist. I had hell dreams all the time.
Oh, yeah, scary.
I was going to burn in the lake of fire.
Yep.
I wasn't going to be good enough. I was probably going to have to be a martyr because the Seventh-day Adventist Church believes, and I'm not putting them down. This is 100% what they believe, and my mum believes this, and I believe that they believe it.
Yep.
That at the end of time, which is coming very soon, there will be a national Sunday law and everyone will be forced to worship on Sunday. And if you don't worship on Sunday, you'll be put to death. So I grew up knowing that I would be a martyr one day.
Wow.
So, yeah, I think a lot of kids growing up with that have hell dreams.
Yes.
And have scary dreams.
Of course they do.
So, but, you know, as Mum would say, this life is a blink of an eye. You're going to get eternity.
Okay.
When you're 15, you got a crush on a boy. It doesn't seem like a blink of an eye.
No.
You know? But, yeah, that's my story. And I left in 2005 when I was about 25 weeks pregnant with the twins and I never went back.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm, 17 years clean?
So, I mean, Mandy very candidly said she was feral as a teenager or went feral for a while. Now, with that kind of restriction on you at every point, internally and externally, did you rebel as a teenager?
I did, but Mum and Dad didn't know. So,
and to keep it secret.
Big secret. So I smoked and we had a big property and I'd go up the back and smoke and then have a shower. And I don't even know why I was smoking because it wasn't even to be cool because I didn't do it in front of people.
Yeah, right.
It was the ultimate. I started working out that I could do things. Mum and Dad didn't know and I wasn't struck by lightning when I did it.
Yeah.
And I definitely hooked up with boys and did things like that. I would tell them I was going to Vespers and I would go to nightclubs in the city. Mm. Dangerous behaviour now. Mm. But they still don't know.
Mm.
Hi, Mum. She doesn't listen.
What about you, Gary?
Mm.
That's, yeah, I mean, I'm just, the more rules you have, the more secrets you have to
yes.
have.
Yes.
You can't have one without the other. And, yeah, well, I mean, as I say, I came in as a 17-year-old and so it's not only your identity that's at stake, it's, as you say, all of your support network, all of your friends, all of the things that give you meaning in life, all of the comfort you can receive from light is tied up with this community or with this tradition or with this belief. And, you know, beliefs are very powerful things, especially when you're a teenager, because you're still trying to shape what they are. You're still trying to find out who you are and what you're going to be and what you're going to do. And I think for some there is a comfort in that, there is a security in that, and we all seek and need security. But honestly, it's no wonder we end up in our adult lives reflecting on things we regret or things we felt we had to do because we didn't want to do them or things we chose. Like you mentioned the nightclubs. I mean, these things you say they're not a criticism. In a sense, we have to accept the fact that if we're being restricted in some way, that's going to affect us as humans because we're not built that way.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And we don't get to experience. I did grieve probably when I was about 45. I really grieved for my youth.
Yeah.
And I thought, I didn't get a youth.
Mm.
I was working at the church.
You didn't.
Volunteering all the time. And we weren't allowed to go to the movies. So I missed all the social constructs that were happening at the time.
Yes, you did.
I used to sit on the bus on the way to school, listen to the people behind me talk about what happened on Neighbours because my parents were the strictest, so we didn't even have a TV. And then I would retell that at school so that no one knew that I didn't have a TV.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you learn how to get around it.
Of course.
So you don't feel like an idiot.
Yeah.
But, you just – you miss huge chunks.
I remember because my parents, we were okay with TV and I could read things and go to movies and stuff like that. But I remember one of my cousins coming over and sleeping over and going, "You're allowed to watch video hits." And I was like, "Yeah, crank it up." I remember thinking, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. I was just so grateful that the bus driver played the radio.
Yeah, so you could keep up with the songs.
Keep up with the songs. Yeah. So, and I've always loved music. Loved it. But I wasn't allowed to go to any concerts. So my best friend Rachel was brought up in a similar way. And I reckon every concert we go to, and her and I probably go to a concert every 3 or 4 months, we hug and cry. We can't believe that as 50-year-old women we're allowed to be there.
Wow.
And we always say to each other, if we could tell ourselves. We were going to get there to do it. Oh. Yeah. And I know that is a criticism. You're right, Gary. I do think that parents truly believe they're doing the right thing. I respect my parents so much.
Yes, of course.
Of course they do.
No but one's they wanting don't to harm anyone.
Give you choice.
No.
Because it's not just missing out on things that are fun. When you say missing out on your childhood, there is that part of it. But what you're missing out on is the essential process of rebelling, figuring out where the boundaries are, figuring out who you are, becoming more independent. And parents, as any parents with teenage children, know that it's a process of gradually letting the child become an adult by testing things out, trying things out, doing the wrong thing sometimes, and trying to nurture, you know, put scaffolding around or guardrails so that they don't kill themselves, but allowing them. And if you're not allowed to experiment and explore and even ask questions, you know, that will stay with you for life.
Well, it's the sort of an interruption in development, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was saying to my psychologist, I can't handle when I hurt people, even if I don't mean to hurt them. I feel like physically sick. My heart races, even if, like, I don't know, you and I were talking, Gary, and then you messaged me later and said, that hurt my feelings that you said that. I would feel really, I didn't know how to do anything about it. And she's like, because you believed you had a God that was looking down, and so you have massive anxiety, not massive anxiety, that's exaggerating, but you have an unusual relationship in wanting to please everybody all the time, because if I didn't please him,
you'd be going to hell.
I was going to hell, and my parents, I didn't even care about going to hell. I cared about disappointing my parents.
Yeah, of course.
And
that's
still with you now.
To.
Yeah. Mm. So, you know, I'm 50 and I've been having counselling about the religion since I was 26.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's a full-on thing.
It's enormous.
So, anyway.
Have we got a story from our childhood that it brings a warm feeling about being in the church?
You want to go?
No, I will go.
Yep.
And I wrote about it in the book too, and it's one of the funniest things about the editing of the book is that we were in the musical Salty the Singing Songbook.
Oh, I loved Salty the Singing Songbook.
But when I wrote the book, I wrote it P-S-A-L-T-Y, but it came back from the editor and she cut the P off and it was just Salty, S-A-L-T-Y.
And I'm like, yes.
And I had to write back and say, no, 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 it's Salty as in the Psalms. And I just chuckled. But being a part of a musical, practices, learn the songs, charity in the Church Mouse Choir. Like, it was just fun. Dad was making the costumes, you know. He's a carpenter. That was all his stuff.
Yeah.
We were doing all that together. We're in the crappy old hall. And that was just a fun time.
They're really
learning all the
church
songs.
Church works hard to keep families together.
Yeah.
Especially when the kids are little.
Yeah. But I do all anyway, that's my warm.
Yep.
Got a warm feeling?
So when my warm feeling really is that when we moved to Melbourne, I was really sad. I did not want to leave Sydney. The church in Sydney had heaps of girls and friends and I went to school with them. We moved to Melbourne. I didn't know anyone, you know, new school, new church. So it's pretty big because it's your whole world. But my best friend Rachel, her dad, her mother had died when she was 5 and her dad started dating a Seventh-day Adventist woman. So she brought Rachel to church. Right. So Rachel was completely unchurched and 11 and we met. And so she, like, I would tell her all the, this is why we do this and this is why we do that. And she knew that I loved jewellery and I wasn't allowed to have any. So she got, it was a really cheap little ring and she used to let me wear it and then I'd give it back to her.
Oh.
And then one day she made me a box out of paper, like an origami, and she put the ring in it.
Oh.
She said, just keep it and don't tell anyone. Oh. And I just... Now I look back and think, you were going to be my best friend for the rest of my life and we're going to go through so much shit together. But it just makes me so glad that those two little girls having that secret got out and but went through. We had a lovely time at church. Rachel and I got baptized together.
Yes.
Right, you know. So we did a lot of church stuff together.
Yes.
So, yeah, that was, I would keep her in a million years. So it was all worth it. Yeah.
Yes. Mm. Gary, got a warm memory?
Well, I was thinking of a funny story, but then a warm memory. Yes, they go together. My best friend in the world who is, I think, still my best friend that I've known since I was five, and I have had a similar connection to the church all this time, although he's still in it.
Mm. Yeah, right. Yes. Lots of my friends. Yep. Mm.
Exactly. And so, you know, he's never left it. We don't talk about it. He doesn't care whether I'm part of the church or not because we're friends. But that was a significant divergence for us.
Totally.
We knocked around together a lot as teenagers and later on as adults because church was so serious. You know, it was always so, everything was so serious.
Yep.
And so you can't be serious all the time. And we would always find something amusing going on or we would have a go at something. We weren't terribly rebellious, but I do remember once we were teenagers in this church, which was in the inner city of Toowoomba, and it was a Gothic or neo-Gothic kind of building, you know, tall spires and stained glass windows and you know, hard wooden pews and all that stuff. Anyway, the pigeons used to nest up in the top of the bell tower, and so however it happened, I don't remember, but I grabbed an air rifle and he and I decided we would do a service to the church because these birds were crapping all over the front steps all the time.
Fair enough, shoot them.
So we climbed up the belfry with this rifle.
Oh, gosh.
to shoot pigeons.
Yes.
We thought, okay, this will be a service we're providing. And
what's that spiritual gift? Murder.
The spiritual gift of having fun.
I mean, looking back, anyway, so we got to the top of the bell tower, and because we'd made so much noise getting up there, there wasn't a pigeon within 1,000 kilometres, you know, and we just sat there and chatted and then came back down. But when it was discovered that we'd been climbing the bell tower with a rifle to shoot pigeons, we had a stern talking to from his father, who was one of the elders,
and
the elders. To say, listen, and the thing they were most, this struck with me as really strange. The thing that they emphasized was that this is a bird sanctuary. You don't harm birds.
Oh,
you
know?
No word about rifles or climbing the belfry.
The fact that you could shot each other.
I have very, very warm memories of lots of laughs with him over the years at Frost.
Yes.
And he and I were on the same ministry team for 10 years, and that's what kept me going because we would always find a way to find something funny happening.
Well, I think there's nothing like Christian sense of humour. And you find comedians that you go, I can tell you've got a church background. Because you can't joke about sex or drugs or anything like that. Yeah. So you've got to find the quirky humour.
And the amount of times something funny would happen in church.
Oh, and
you think, I'm going to die of laughter here. And mum would be stop.
I know. Once,
the whole pew shaking.
Once I had my feet up on the wooden pew and we were laughing so hard that I pushed the wooden, no one was sitting in front of us, I pushed the pew over and it just went slam. And then we're right up the back as teenagers do. There's a whole church just turns around and there's Mandy like. But my story that's similar to the guns is that when I was a teenager, I hated going, I hated going. My mum and dad would pick me up from sleepovers.
Yes,
and it was awful because all my friends were sleeping in and I'd have to get up and quietly get dressed and then go out and go to church as if I'd want to be there.
Yeah.
Anyway, one day I stood out the front with my friend Ryan and I said, I wish this place had burned down and then I wouldn't have to come here. And then the next Thursday, it burnt down.
Terrible, Mandy.
You don't believe me, but this is a true story and I can get verification. So can you imagine how guilty I felt?
Oh, yes.
So mum and dad are up at like 5 a.m. Everyone's, the church has burnt down, the church has burnt down. And I'm like, I wished for this to happen last Sunday. So anyway, I go to school and I'm just beside myself.
Yeah.
And then we get home and then we have to go. This is my sister and I talk about this a lot. We have to go and have a look at the burnt down church.
Yes.
And so we have all this, a little bit of trauma from going into our second home and seeing the smell.
Yeah.
We spent our whole life there.
Yeah,
so you can imagine it burning down.
Yeah.
And I think I'm the one that's done it.
Yes.
terrible.
You put a hex on the church.
So then my friend's like, you said you wanted the church to burn down. I didn't do it. I'm 15. Anyway, I think eventually my guilt must have come out and I've told mum and dad. And then apparently then someone else came up to me and said, don't worry, one of the elders had said the only way we could ever get new buildings is if the church burnt down. So you're not the only person that said it, okay?
You're like, well, and then it I ended didn't quite up being, say that.
It was, no, it was I wished it
yep.
to happen. So that has been a joke from my friends and me for 30 years, like be careful what Manny says. So, anyway, it got rebuilt, but that was a horrendous time because we were fished off to all the churches in the area while it got rebuilt. So we'd have to go to the Catholics for Sunday school, the Anglicans for girls' club, the whatever. The,
whenever there was a spot.
Whenever there was a spot, we were moved. So it was actually way more traumatic. And worse. I had to go more.
Yes, more trips.
Yes.
Yep.
So, yeah, how's about that as a 15-year-old, feeling the guilt of burning down your church?
We had this time where a taxi was parked out the front of our church. I don't know why. And the minister said, I'm not lying. He said, and does anyone know where the devil is? And then the taxi spoke on his little thing, which came over the church intercom, and he said, I'm out the front of Nunawading Seventh-day Adventist Church in Central Road in Nunawading. And people were like, and someone ran out there like, it's a taxi. And then we laughed. I think all the children shit themselves. They're like, this is it.
He's here.
He's coming.
Oh, my goodness. Mm. Oh, Gary, you're speechless.
No, you're just triggering a lot of memories.
I know. Did you burn down a church?
Really good and some of them aren't so good, but I'm just listening and remembering.
He's a processor, whereas we're just an expressor.
In terms of making jokes about sex and whatever, I think the difference for me in comedians is whether or not they're actually trying to be hurtful or whether they're just pointing out something that's patently absurd and
I
it
agree.
Is laughable, whether it's sex or anything else.
Totally.
And So this mate of mine who I was telling you about, Ross, he was at the football with the blokes from the youth group, and they knew that halftime was coming and they had to quickly get to the toilets before the crowd. So he shot through, went to the male toilets, went into the cubicle, and one of the guys followed him in as a joke.
Yep.
You know, one of the youth group guys followed him in and shut the door. And then this huge crowd arrived of people who came into the toilets. And they were stuck in there in this cubicle and they couldn't figure out whether they should come out or not, you know.
Come out in many ways.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you this story. This is way later. I was doing RE, religion classes at school.
I really loved them. I was good at it.
Yeah, 100%. Yep. I was so good. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting. I was the school of 1,500 students and I had a grade 12 class and they were a great class. Anyway, about 30 of them. And I remember this one morning, I walked into the school grounds, there's kids everywhere, young people everywhere wandering around. I walked through the crowds and I got to the class and I did the 50-minute class or whatever, and it went okay, I thought, and then walked all the way back out through the crowds. And I got to my car and I could see my reflection in the window of the car, and it was then that I discovered that my fly was up.
Oh, Gary!
You know, I mean, it hadn't just come down. I hadn't pulled it up at all. It was completely open.
Oh.
And I could even see my pale blue shirt through, behind my back.
I can feel the shame.
Gary, the RE teacher with his zip undone, that would have caused
hilarity. I can't ever go back to this school again. Fortunately, the next week there was some reason why I couldn't, so I didn't. But 2 weeks later I went back, to the class and I got to the front of the class and I said, listen, guys, about last time, when I was here, I really need to apologize. And they said, yeah, your fly was undone.
Oh, why didn't
and
one of those little smart aleks tell you?
Why didn't somebody say something? But there was no laughing. There was no, I don't know whether they laughed afterwards. But so that story was well told many times in the church.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
What were the funny things that you did, like, at youth group and stuff? Did you have, like, acronyms for groups, or did you have... What were the stuff you did as teenagers? Like, for us, we had the progressive dinners. So we would go to each other's houses. So we'd have to walk and get the – we'd have a progressive pizza. We'd get the base at our house, and we'd go and put the cheese on at so-and-so's house. Then we'd move to the ham at the next person's house. Then we'd get the pineapple. Then we'd go back to the church and cook the whole pizzas.
Oh, no.
Because everyone sort of lived in the area. Yeah. So we could all walk around to everyone's house. I love those nights.
Oh, I loved progressive dinner. Yeah. But we'd do, like – chips and cheese was at one house.
Yep.
Then the next house you'd have soup, and then the next house you'd have who the coolest people you'd finish at their house so that you could hang. You know, they had two.
Did you ever have
rooms.
A regressive dinner?
No.
Yes, we start with
dessert. You start with dessert.
Oh, that would have been much better.
Definitely did. Our church used to do themed dinners.
Yep.
So, like, the church would be done like a ship. And everybody would dress up as they were going on a cruise.
Yes, lots of dress ups.
Lots of dress ups. So many.
Exactly.
And we couldn't.
I think the fancy dress stores that have survived are connected with churches.
They
must be. Absolutely. We loved them too.
And Dad would build all sorts of things.
Oh, so many props.
Pyramid. I remember him going as a pyramid once, built a whole wooden pyramid.
Oh, I know.
So it's very social.
It was very social.
But you know, as talking about you were saying, Kate, we dancing was out. You couldn't dance.
No.
Because somehow or other that would lead to death and destruction. I don't know. But so we wanted to have a barn dance, you know,
and so we
had it quietly, but we had to advertise it as rural movement to music.
Rural movement to music.
Honestly, Gary. We did. Because people, the if they thought we were dancing,
we had people used to do sort of sign language to the choir.
Yeah, it's liturgical dancing.
And someone said, "We are not having that stationary dancing at our church."
Stationary
and
dancing?
I just stayed with me. Stationary
I loved
dancing.
A liturgical dance.
Oh.
Because I could never do
it. And the Alleluia was really big the wing arms billowing. Oh, my gosh. I thought those girls are cool. I didn't get to be the.
What is that joke
dancer?
About the religious people don't – they don't have sex standing up because it might lead to dancing.
Yeah. We used to say it all the time. When we were kids, obviously dancing is supposed to lead to sex because it's, you know, sexual and moving. But, yeah, when I first heard someone say sex might lead to dancing, oh, my gosh, I cried and cried. It was so funny. And then other people don't get it.
I know.
The jokes like that.
Oh, little – and we would always say hands down for coffee. Yeah. If you talked about, like, Pentecostals always had their hands up, so you couldn't ask them if they wanted a coffee because their hands were always up. So we would say hands down, who wants a coffee? Like, silly little things. Every sort of group has their own in jokes, don't they?
You know? They do.
Yeah.
But I mean, I had really funny, good laughs at the church. And I remember, though, we used to pride ourselves that we don't need to drink to be funny. We don't need to do this to be funny.
All of
that. We really upgave ourselves a lot of.
Because we had to.
Well, we did have to.
Yeah.
But yeah, we did. We used to do car rallies.
Yep.
Which now I think, gosh, dangerous.
Yeah. Oh, total car rallies.
18-year-olds driving around trying to get to locations quicker than everybody else. Oh, my gosh. Yep. But, I mean, I loved youth group. It was my whole life.
Yeah.
I met my ex-husband there.
Yep.
You know, like, it was all-encompassing. So
I would go to youth group and then go to the parties.
Yes.
School parties.
Yes.
And so I'd arrive and all my friends were already drunk. And so I just have to go, oh, we've just done the $2 night where I walked down to the shops and had to get as many things as I could for $2. So we'd go to the old-fashioned Bunnings and buy 200 little bolts that were a cent each. Like, you had to – then I'd go, hi, guys, and they're all like, Mandy's here. Talk about colliding into worlds.
The worlds. Well,
I was at a mainstream school, always was. So yeah. I was always jostling between I'm weird, I want to be like you guys, I love my church world, but I know I'm weird all my whole life.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So I was at a Seventh-day Adventist school, but there were a lot of kids there that were just Christians.
Yeah.
So I was so jealous of their freedom. I just couldn't believe that they could, you know, swim on Saturday or have friends sleep over on Friday nights or...
But I think my friends were jealous of my friends. I had a huge group of extra friends that I'd met on camps, and I had, it appeared, I think, that I had, you know, I was going on summer camps and I was all that sort of stuff. And some of my friends would be like, oh, I just watched the tennis all summer and they didn't do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was always had access to activities.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. We did summer camps and all of that sort of stuff. But I think I don't think my friends were jealous.
No, I'm not saying jealous. Maybe they were just they couldn't understand how social I was because their school friends were their friends.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Well, whereas I was really... like, you're my school friends. I've got my church friends. I've got,
No, we were all the one gang.
Yeah.
So, but I will say that I think my love of music is from church.
Oh, totally.
I was in the choir and the band.
Oh.
Gary,
did you play an instrument or sing or anything?
No, I sang, but I only choir singing. Yeah, yeah, I didn't sing solo.
No.
Yeah.
But it's still, choir singing is so good for the soul.
And I think when I left, what did I go to? A choir.
Choir singing.
Because I was like, I've got to find something else. And I think there's something to be said for when you've grown up in something that you're searching for whatever dogma might fit, you know. And so I was like, okay, I can join a choir. I know they've got structure. There's an international body. All right, I have to go every Monday night. It's 2.5 hours. Okay. And then the first night we went and they didn't pray at the end. And I was like, what?
I know.
I just left.
I know.
I was like, oh, but they had like a singing in ceremony and a singing out ceremony. And so there was all those things that I think I had to replace it with or I was trying to find. How can I replace all these rituals? The loss of the rituals were really big for me.
It's really big. Yes. I think that's why people who are completely agnostic or atheist still sing Christmas carols.
Yeah.
Because the tradition and the ritual is so comforting. You know, you don't, and for 2 hours a week or whatever, you don't have to think.
And I would cry at that choir for years and people didn't realise. They just go, oh, man, he's going to cry again. And I was like, no, because you don't understand what I lost.
Yeah.
And to come here and sing with you every week, none of you know.
No,
I couldn't really say why.
Well, you can.
Yeah.
And it's so tricky because even this is tricky. Because you can't express some things without hurting people you
love. That's
right.
That's
so, and that's where I think I struggle the most because is there freedom then? Like if
I don't think so.
And I'm not talking about hateful speech. I'm just saying, well, I don't mind that. I don't mind if you drink coffee, you know? Like, I think, I struggle. I struggle with where is, because when you're growing up in the church, you're always taught, we have freedom, we have peace. And then I found all that when I left. I found complete freedom. For me, not knowing what's coming ahead is such peace where I know other people really need the other and won't understand what I'm saying. But the fact that there's no guarantees, so therefore, you know, if there's a heaven or there's not a heaven, well, so be it, but I don't feel like I need to get there. So, yeah, it's just a huge mindset. Yeah,
we get defensive about what we believe, don't we? And even if somebody is not criticizing what we believe but they don't believe it, that is taken almost as a threat against what I believe. You don't believe that? What are you talking about? Of course, you know. And it can seem as if it's an attack when really all you're doing is being honest about your belief.
That's why I had to come up with the term I'm having a extended faith crisis.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't say, I can't go anymore.
No.
So I just came up with that line and I felt like it sort of explained something. And I'd have the two reactions, the recoil or the me too.
Yeah.
And then I'd be like, oh, I'm finding some people. Yeah.
Yeah.
So linking into that, what was your reckoning, Gary? Was it an overnight thing or was it a gradual thing? Like, why did you stop?
Oh, well, as with most things, it was gradual, but there were some moments that punctuated it that were quite memorable. It was a process, I think, of growing out of what I had accepted before and questioning all kinds of things. And a lot of that did coalesce around Christopher's birth and his first few years. Mm. And I can't complain about the treatment we got in the church or anything. It wasn't that we felt shunned or anything, but I did suddenly feel like I was no longer part of that tribe. Mm. You know, I was now ushered into a new and different tribe and didn't really know how to fit that in. Mm. And there were questions that came up to me about who this God is and, you know, all those standard questions, why did these things happen? But that didn't lead me to leaving the church. That led me on a very interesting journey of figuring out who this God is. And it was a drift. There were moments where I thought, this is just all made up.
Yes.
People have said to me a couple of times, well-meaning friends have said, now, well, but how do you explain, you know, where we came from, all of the complexities and everything? Yes. I said, well, I can't explain it.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, your explanation doesn't make any sense.
Oh, I know, but yeah. To them
and
it does.
So there was a lot of, I tend to live in my head a lot. So there was a lot of that internal head stuff going on for me. And one day it just dawned on me, okay. It makes sense to me that this is made up. I can see how that could happen.
Mm.
And I can see how, you know, it's difficult for people to get out of it once they're in it. And yeah, that's fine. I just don't believe it anymore. One of the key moments for me, I think, was I heard an interview with, you know, Bart Campolo.
Yeah.
Tony Campolo's son.
Yes. Yep.
For those of you who talk don't about know, him, Tony Campolo
he's got an awesome podcast.
He's a big Christian.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was when he first it first dawned on him that he couldn't believe this stuff anymore. And he didn't. He says he's very clear. He says it's not that I chose not to believe; I just couldn't.
Yes,
you know. And he said I had to go and tell my dear mum and dad that I just
one of the biggest evangelists in the world.
In the world, every religion knows who he is.
Conservative, but you know who doesn't love Tony Campolo for all the fantastic
work.
Whatever. And Bart now, I believe, if he still is the humanist chaplain.
Yep.
Yeah, at UCLA. And he's doing exactly the same things he was doing before, helping people to find each other, helping people come out of addiction, helping people who've come out and whose families have rejected them. He said, I'm doing exactly the same things I was doing before, but there's no magic element involved. Yes. It's just us and we are all we have, so let's be good to each other and all that kind of thing. So when I heard that and then I heard how he and his dad had processed
that. Stunning.
You know, made videos, wrote a book. Father and son coming to terms with this.
Mm.
And it was funny because do you remember he said when he first told them that their first concern was, well, what are you going to do for a job?
Yeah.
Well, that's right.
You must have been the same.
Yes.
And it did. It affected his career. But so for me, he was able to put in words exactly what was true for me. I just could no longer believe this anymore.
Mm.
Not because I didn't want to. I'd love to believe in a loving father who's out there somewhere and who I'm going to meet one day. Mm. That's nice.
Mm.
Maybe there is.
Mm.
I'm not saying there isn't. I'm just saying I can understand why people would believe there was.
Mm.
And it doesn't mean there is. And so for me, it was quite an internal process of thinking for me.
I remember I just couldn't sing. Mm. So I'd stand in church and my throat would close. And I just, and that's how I expressed my faith was through singing. Mm. So I'd stand there thinking,
but what was happening, Mandy? Why couldn't you sing?
I couldn't say the words.
Yeah, but why?
Because I was so sad about what had happened with the girls.
Yeah, and do you think that growing up in a church, you felt like, well, I believed this fully, and God protected me, and all this, and all of a sudden He didn't.
Yes, at the very basic sort of childlike faith.
Yeah, and that's what we had.
Yeah, I was like, how could this happen to them? But then I would say, well, people suffer all around the world, Mandy. Like, you know. Yeah. So, but I suppose just, I looked around and saw everyone that hadn't gone through what I had.
Yes.
Even though, who do I think I am? Everybody's gone through hard things. Yes. But I, in that age of my life and that fatigue with having two little babies, I just couldn't. I think I've wrangled everyone to get here on time.
Oh, yeah, big time.
I'm standing here and I can't participate how I used to.
And all of it doesn't make sense.
And it doesn't. And I don't know what to do with my body.
Yeah.
Because I just want to cry and I have to get out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have to listen.
Yeah. And who could you talk to about that at the time?
No one.
No, you can't. You can't. You're on your own. Because the people that you normally talk to is the church minister or the elder or, you know, and basically you're telling them, I don't think I believe this.
Yeah.
And they, you can't.
You can't.
You think you could, but you really can't. Yeah. Yeah. Who did you talk to, Gary?
No one.
Yeah. See, you can't.
And I think Tamara and I talked about it a bit, tried to process that, but we weren't really in a good place where that helped either.
Yeah.
And I actually think churches, if I could go back to a church today and stand up in front of them, I would say you need to have a way for people to kindly leave.
Yes.
That's what you need. Yeah. The same effort that you bring people in with.
Yeah.
You should extend
an honouring.
Yeah, an honour that they did this and they loved it and they're welcome back to reunions and, yes. You know, because there is no way out except, well, for me, I had to slam the door and that's painful.
Yeah.
Like super painful to realise that those people, well, don't want you. They want you there, but only if you believe what they believe.
Mm. And I think there's much to be said for, well, I can only speak for a woman, first time mothering with twins, to get there, to think
so
about trying to breastfeed, to think about changing nappies, to think about the exhaustion of getting there to then listen to some turkey burger talking about things that you just don't even care about anymore.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, I can't even hear you.
Yeah.
What is the point in me coming here? I'm so tired.
So tired. You could be napping and your husband's home and he could actually have taken the girls for a walk.
I think there's a lot to be said for the women that are busting their asses.
Oh, women.
Yeah, and our mothers did that. Well, my mum did that, definitely. Yeah, and then did it, and then possibly didn't work. And so now our generation and down are saying, hell no, I'm going to work. I'm not volunteering my whole life. Yeah, there has to be repercussions of that.
They still volunteer though.
Yeah, they do on top of it.
They really do.
Yeah, a lot of my friends do and I admire them, but I think I just was, so the most tired I've ever been in my whole life. Oh, I couldn't do it.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah. So you're not making good decisions anyway.
No, that's right. That's right. I was trying to work that out. And then that guilt of I'm not bringing them up in the church and my parents are so upset. And
You're breaking. Absolutely breaking people's hearts. I say to people, imagine your child coming to you and saying, I've decided to become homeless and an ice addict and I'm going to abuse people on the street. That is what it's like to say to your parents who love a church, I'm not doing it anymore. Like it's really tricky for them. And as a person, especially people who don't like to hurt people, it's brutal. And so you have to understand how much we really believe we're doing the right thing to not go. You know, there must be people sitting there who don't necessarily believe it, but I couldn't do it.
Mm.
Yeah. So, And so for me, and I've told this story in the book, when I was pregnant with the twins, I was so active at church before I was pregnant with them. I was like children's ministries leader, worship leader, everything. We lived at that church. I had three kids by that point. And when I got pregnant with the twins, they sort of said, look, try and rest as much as you can because they're so little and we'll have protein shakes. So I just would stay home. It was the only day my husband didn't work was Saturday. So I would stay home and try and rest on that day and not take kids to school and kinder and, you know. And I had, so I wasn't regularly going to church, but everyone at church was praying and they were happy, you know, rest. An occasional,
it's like legitimate. You legitimate, don't have to go.
Yeah.
Every woman's dream.
Everyone's. And occasionally my ex would take the children. So then I'd have the house to myself to lie in bed. It was beautiful. Anyway, I had all of my scans nearly at this private obstetrician's place. It was in a very leafy suburb of Melbourne called Camberwell. And I just remember going there and thinking, this house where he does the scans is so stunning and this is just being used for this. Like how much money there is in this, that this $3 million house is just being used as a doctor's office. But occasionally he couldn't see me because I had three scans a week and I would go to fetal monitoring at Monash, massive big hospital in Melbourne where Mandy's twins and my twins were born. And the high-risk pregnancies, you went to a different area for your fetal monitoring and you'd sit in this room and it was daggy and it was quiet because no women talked to the other women because they weren't like, well, why are you here? Because everyone was there because their babies were at risk of dying. And the scanning machine was old and clunky and because he was the head of that, he would see me there. And I remember going there, sitting in the room, looking at all these women, feeling the fear for them and for myself, having the scan, feeling annoyed that the scanning machine was so shit for all those women. And I was in no way wealthy, but I had private health insurance and I'd reached the cap, remember, you know, we could have these scans. And I came home and I hopped in the shower and I was crying and I was praying and I was saying, just save my babies, save my babies. And I just saw that room with all those women and I thought, is God not going to save their babies because they're not asking? Because there's all these things in the Bible, ask and it will be given to you. If you've got the faith of a mustard seed, you can move mountains. And the whole thing crashed in and I thought, I can't have a God that does that. He should save all those babies. Those women don't even know to pray to him. How can he do this? Doesn't he love us all? Aren't we all his children? And I literally stopped believing then.
Hmm.
And it was like a wall hit me and I cried and cried. My heart was racing and I thought, I can't go back to church. And it took me a while to tell my ex-husband, I reckon months, but I just couldn't go back. And I never, I only went back once when Dad was preaching. And I've never been back. Doesn't make sense to me how people, I respect it and my mum loves it and she'll talk to me about it every week. But I can't, if that's what God is and he chooses who he helps, he can't be in my life.
So for you, the God that you suddenly couldn't believe in anymore was replaced by another kind of God or no God?
No God. So probably am agnostic now, like I'm not 100% sure what's there. I don't know that there isn't something, you know, sometimes. Yeah. But all the things that I felt at church, like small group, women's group, prayer group, I'd start having like dinners with the twin mums and go, hang on, I feel just as connected and uplifted. It's actually chatting with women that's giving me these feelings. Or I'd volunteer for the Multiple Birth Association. Oh, that makes me feel like helping at church. It isn't actually, for me, it wasn't the magic of God. I think for a long time I felt a massive void. Saturdays were the weirdest day.
Yes.
I just couldn't process. And I remember the first time I went to the shops.
Yeah.
And literally thinking something bad's going to happen to me here because Seventh Day Adventists don't do anything. They have like a Jewish Sabbath. And then I remember thinking, I'm not going to see anyone I know. Because every time when you're in a church, you go somewhere, you see
off to
people.
Tiffany's.
Yeah, I can do what I want. I can go to Dan Murphy's, you know. So I think also because I was so frantic about the pregnancy and then I had tiny babies with all these issues and three other kids, I didn't have time.
No, I didn't have time either really.
But I was sad.
I was sad on a Sunday and sad. We'd go to the shops and I'd think, I know all my friends are there with all their kids and they're all having a nice time together. Yeah.
Yep.
And we're just this empty shell of a family. That's how I felt. I don't feel like that now. But that at the time I thought there's nothing special about us.
And I felt,
because you feel like you're special when you're there.
You are special when you're at church.
Yeah.
And our family was special.
I remember having a moment in my old house when I heard this very loud voice in my head say, just be like Jesus in the world. You don't have to go to church.
No.
And so I was like, okay, I'm listening to that. Mm. So then I committed to that. I thought that I can do that.
Yeah.
I can be that kind person in my mother's group. I can be that person at the kinder with the twin mums. I can find community. I'm a person that loves community. Yeah. I can build. I'm just going to have to build it differently.
Yeah.
And I've tried. And we've tried.
Yeah, we have. We have.
So for you, Mandy, it's not a crisis of belief.
I don't know. I think that I identify with the humanism. So if I was going to say anything, then I think I just about wrote in the book, I'm a humanist, but I didn't want to declare my hand. But I love that podcast, Humanize Me. And I think, yes, I love humans.
Yes.
Yeah. But I couldn't read the Bible anymore. I couldn't pray anymore. I haven't prayed for 17 years.
Okay.
So, yeah, whatever that means then.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. I'd feel like a... If someone said, I'm going to pray for you, I'd be like, oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yes.
I don't know what to say to you. I'd just say, oh, thank you.
Well, sometimes
Or on my lowest day, I'd go, why bother?
Well, and I think I really appreciate it's a lovely thing to say. Now I say I'm going to light a candle for you, which is what my Irish cousins
which
do.
Which is really nice.
And then they see the candle and they think of me when I'm having a tough day. But for me, triggering's too big a word. I'm not sure what the word is, but I feel like it's a cop-out. It's like thinking of you.
Oh, yeah, it's just nothing. It doesn't mean anything. No. You've got to be in this life with me.
Doing with me, sitting with me. Come and sit with me and cry. Don't pray. And I feel like it's an easy way of getting out of doing or being present with someone, just saying, I'll pray for you. So I don't really like it. I think it's lovely that people do it, but it's not something that I find comforting. When someone says to me, I'll pray for you.
And I didn't know there was the word deconstruction. Mm-mm. I didn't know that then. And it's sort of really big now, isn't it?
Mm-mm.
The idea of deconstructing and then reconstructing.
Mm.
I wish I had have had that language.
Yeah.
Yeah. The flip side of not necessarily being comfortable offering to pray for someone is being asked to pray for someone.
Yes, yes.
And
yes,
that's Gary. Where it gets awkward, because then how much do you explain at that moment?
I'm in an extended faith crisis. It always works.
Do you just go ahead and do it and pretend because it's not worth it? I did that once.
Did you?
I was with Christopher doing I was presenting at an event in an aged folks home, and right at the end of it, the lady who was in, and I said, thank you very much. It's been great to be here, you know. Let's talk over the cup of tea. She said, now, would you pray for us?
Mm.
And I did. And Christopher's up the back. Like, Christopher had no experience of me as a minister or a church really at all.
That is so weird.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I did. I prayed what I would have said previously, and it would have sounded the same.
Mm.
I thought, look, it's not worth trying to. Well, I'm stuck. I'm cornered. I can't say I'm not going to pray for you all.
No.
I know. I don't,
and your
there
audience.
There is no God. What's the point of praying? You know,
It wasn't fair to your audience. No. Yeah.
Yeah. And then when I opened my eyes at the end of the prayer, there's Christopher up the back laughing his head off. What the hell are you doing, Dad?
I know. I mean, I took the girls back to a church when they were sort of mid-primary school, and we were just the heathens. You should have heard them. What's that bath? Why are people drinking that drink?
Yeah.
I don't care about Jesus.
Yeah.
I want to go home. Yeah. This is boring.
Yeah.
These seats are uncomfortable. Who are these people? Like, I was just like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
We are these people. How could my children not know anything about this?
No.
It was so weird and funny. And then I just escaped out of there because I was like, I cannot do FOIA talk.
No.
I can't. I'm not your people.
No.
I'm trying. I'm trying to find a place again. I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. But I'm not what – you can't trust me.
No.
I think I said to them, you can't trust me because I'm someone that will just leave next week.
Yeah.
So don't think I'm back and I'm going to be on your worship team.
So did you lose friends, Gary?
Yes.
Mm.
Not in an overt way, but people backed off. People won't connect with me anymore. Yeah. Mm. And I suspect they just don't know what to say or what's going on, and they don't want to get into it. I think they probably join the dots. They put two and two together and get six, and they decide, Gary's turned his back on God.
Yep.
And I know that he you know, if I got into an argument with him, he'd probably win. So I'm not going to get into it. But see, there I am joining the dots about them because we haven't had those conversations.
Yeah, that's right.
Sometimes it's quite by a complete delightful surprise that I will discover that somebody's been on the same journey and they weren't keen on telling me, you know, until it came out. And then, oh, yeah, I'm the same, you know. So that does happen.
Yeah, that's lovely.
And I lose friends. I haven't lost my best friend and I haven't lost those who were important to me at the time. So, no, I can't say I have really.
Mm.
A lot of those people I probably didn't, well, they weren't friends anyway. They were just part of that mix.
Yeah, it's like being at a job or a school. You hang out with
footy
people.
Club or,
But we hemorrhaged friends. I'd say we lost 90% of our friends, 80% of our friends.
Wow.
Yeah. Like people that were in our wedding and, you know, we'd been away with every year on holidays and basically they weren't mean. Like none of them were mean. And if I saw them in the street, they'd give me a hug and say, hi, how you going? Lovely to see you. But the thing that people said to me all the time, and if you're a Christian listening to this, do not say this, we miss you at church. And I just wanted them to say, we miss you. But they didn't miss me. They just missed. And then I was like, you just missed the fact that I'm a worship leader and that we tithed here and we gave offerings and we did all the volunteer work. Do you miss me? And that's me being probably a little bit bitter. But I think if you miss someone, you miss them, you know, and I don't, I mean, they obviously don't miss me. They're not ringing me every week.
Yeah.
And that was a long time ago now and I've rebuilt friends, but it's, and thank God I have Rachel and I have, you know, a couple of friends from school that I'm still friends with. But someone said to me recently something about, they were being hurtful, but they said something about, oh, you don't have, you've, something about you don't have old friends. And I said, well, no, because they all left. They won't be involved with me now. So, you know, when you think about rebuilding your life at 33, which I know people do when they move overseas or, you know.
All sorts of things.
And, you know, we've all had it with children with disability where you're like, oh, this is a new life. But this was actually something I chose. Like I chose this. This is what I wanted for myself. So I think maybe that threatens them as well.
Mm.
But it was very, very lonely. Very lonely, but freedom at the same time.
I just remember thinking, oh, I don't have to go to meetings.
I know meetings. No meetings.
Oh, I can just watch TV every single night.
Oh, there's a lot
night.
I don't miss, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and I can watch whatever I want.
Yeah.
I can go to movies.
You can,
I can dance.
Yeah.
Oh.
I found this thing that I wanted to read, and it's by Michael Frost. I didn't know Gary knows Michael Frost.
Oh, Frosty, yeah.
Good old Frosty. and it said, to those who have lost their faith and regained it. Harold Kushner once wrote about the difference between once-born souls, those who retain their childlike simple faith, and twice-born souls, those who lose their early belief and regain a richer, deeper faith. The once-born people who sail through life without experiencing anything that shatters or complicates their faith, they may have financial reverses, problems with their children and so forth, but they always feel that a kindly God is controlling things. Twice-born souls, on the other hand, are people who lose their faith and then regain it, but their new faith is very different from the one they lost. Instead of seeing a world flooded with sunshine, as the once-borns always do, they see a world where the sun struggles to come out after a storm, but always manages to reappear. Theirs is a less cheerful, less confident, more realistic outlook. God is no longer the parent who keeps them safe and dry. He is the power that enables them to keep going in a stormy and dangerous world. And like the bone that breaks and heals stronger at the broken place, like the string that is stronger where it broke and was knotted, it is a stronger faith than it was before because it has learned it can survive the loss of faith.
Mm.
What do you think about that?
Well, I haven't had that.
That's true, the twice-born soul, absolutely. I became a twice-born soul, but then I moved away from faith altogether.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Mm.
You know, he's talking about people who are still people of faith, but they've matured.
Yeah. And being able to stay.
The thing that
And it does make, you know, your story about the shower, Kate, I've just been sitting here pondering that. There's so much there, and I did read it in the book and I have thought about it a lot. It just strikes me how different things would be if the people who did the theology and come up with the doctrines and come up with the rules and wrote the Bible were actually not only just women but mums.
Yes, it would be so different.
Not blokes, you know. Because
well, that's where you just come to actually and think, I can't actually relate to a word you're saying.
There's no female voice in this.
I'd be going to church, sitting there listening to a man in his 40s, and I'd think, I don't understand a word you're talking about. Get me up there, and I'll have people.
You don't understand a word of my life.
You don't understand a thing that's going on for me.
No.
Yep.
No, and I think. Actually, the beginning of me leaving my faith, probably before I even knew it, was reading, is it Philip Yancey who wrote What's So Amazing About Grace?
Mm-hmm.
Is that him?
Yep.
And he has this quote in the book that says, there's nothing you can do to make God love you more, and there's nothing you can do to make God love you less. And I had to read it and reread it because my whole life I knew all the things that I had to do to make God love me less. And I remember showing it to someone at church and they said, you shouldn't read books that aren't printed by the church.
Oh, boy.
And I was like, it's too late. The seed has been planted and I can't escape this anymore. But even now I think if there's a God and he looks down, maybe there is nothing I can do to make him love me less. My children, I love my children. I can have a fight with them. I can disagree fundamentally with politics. I love them and I'd die for them that minute. So if there's a God, surely that's what they are like.
That's what she's like.
That's what she's like.
I know.
I think so. I don't think it can just be. Yeah, but
she's a mother of children with disabilities.
I think so. She really, well, she is.
She is.
Yep. She really, really is. All right, peas and beans and everybody else listening. I know it's been a little bit heavy, but we're going to leave it here today. And then next week there's going to be part two.
Yes.
I promise there will be light at the end of the tunnel. We just didn't want to give you 3 hours of our.
Which we could do. We could do this for hours.
Our deconstruction journeys. We hope that you have enjoyed so far listening to us.
Yeah, we're going
to
do our Laugh, Cry, Make a Difference at the end of next week's episode. Yeah. So you're not going to have that today.
No.
But, yep, we'll be back, okay?
We will, and we know it's different.
Yep.
But it actually, I think it explains a lot about who the three of us are.
Yeah.
So we will see you next Thursday.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.